Hello, and welcome to Nice News. This is a broadcast about interesting topics. I'm Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. On Nice News, we cover information from all over the world, and the topics can be on wellness or animals, archaeology, or even kindness. This program provides a time out from the daily news that doesn't always cover the happiest of topics. So, give us a listen. Who knows what might give you a laugh or cause you to remember something from another era, or even pique your interest like this subject. We can make a big difference. A former hospice nurse recycles medical equipment for low-income patients. Lauren Hando writes this article. According to the nonprofit Partners for World Health, U.S. hospitals discard more than 5 million tons of medical supplies, equipment, and trash each year. Owen Neal is interested in that discard, specifically the equipment like wheelchairs that could go to someone else in need. In 2002, O'Neill began working as a hospice nurse in Palm Beach County. That's in Florida. After his parents died, many of their grieving loved ones would ask O'Neill to remove the medical equipment that was no longer needed and served as a painful reminder of their loss. Those requests inspired the 2005 formation of Clinics Can Help, a not-for-profit that has provided gently used, donated medical equipment to more than 12,500 children and adults. People would want to donate the medical equipment, O'Neill, 55, said. The empty hospital bed reminded him of someone that he'd loved being sick, and they didn't want to have that memory. They wanted to remember the person as a friend and the people that they were. The equipment collected from hospitals, doctors' offices, individuals, and nonprofits is rehomed to people who might not otherwise be able to afford it, many of whom O'Neill had met at a low-income clinic where he volunteered. Recycling medical equipment is a simple, cost-effective solution to increasing access to medical care, O'Neill said. He now serves as the Clinics Can Help's CEO. We clean, refurbish it, and give it to someone who needs it. Clinics Can Help aims to make medical equipment and supplies accessible to anyone who is in need, regardless of financial or physical obstacles, and it serves patients of all ages. In doing so, the not-for-profit agency is working to address health inequity and hopefully reduce the chances of patients requiring another expensive trip to the hospital after a medical event like a fall. When you fall out of bed and break a hip, the chances of passing after a broken hip are about 75%, and it was happening all the time, O'Neill explained, noting that having proper medical equipment reduces that risk of death and rehospitalization. One recipient, Casey Bicknell, who suffered a bilateral head injury when he was 17, received equipment from Clinics Can Help after going through millions of dollars of medical insurance. O'Neill shared Casey's father, Barry, wanted to bring him home, and he was afraid that he couldn't bring him home. He'd just end up going to a nursing home. We set him up with all the equipment he needed to bring his son home. You took the time to care by asking about my son Casey's condition. Then, with your knowledge, you began to give us more than we asked for. You said we will need this and that, etc. I was both overwhelmed with everything that was needed and keep thinking, how much is this going to cost? I pulled out my checkbook, but you said it would cost me nothing. I cried. No one in my life has ever cared to offer us help for free, Barry wrote in a testimonial. And Casey and Barry aren't Clinics Can Help's only grateful recipients. 97% of the not-for-profit's clients agreed that they were treated with consideration by the staff. 91% agreed that the medical equipment improved their quality of life. Proud to hold the title of the largest not-for-profit of its kind in Florida, Clinics Can Help has donated over $7 million worth of medical equipment and supplies in the past 12 years. When a person has access to medical equipment and supplies that they need, they heal faster with greater chance of recovery, and they have the mobility, the independence, and the dignity for a quality of life, said O'Neill. We can make a difference. This article was written by Lauren Hando and is titled, We Can Make a Difference. Former hospice nurse recycles medical equipment for low-income patients. Our next article is titled, No Cervical Cancer Cases in HPV Vaccinated Women. A new study has found that no cases of cervical cancer have been detected in young women who have been fully vaccinated as part of the HPV immunization program. The Public Health Scotland research said that the HPV, that's the human papillomavirus, vaccine was highly effective in preventing the development of cancer HPV, which is a sexually transmitted infection and is responsible for almost all cases of cervical cancer, the fourth most common cause of cancer in women worldwide. The vaccination program started in 2008 with girls offered the vaccine in their first year at a secondary school. They were about 12 or 13 at the time. The vaccine, which is now offered to boys, also helps to protect them from other HPV-related cancers later in life, such as head, neck, and anogenital cancers, as well as genital warts. What is human papillomavirus? It is the name given to a common group of viruses. There are more than 100 types of HPV. Many women will be infected with HPV over the course of their lifetime without any ill effect. In the vast majority of cases, there will be no symptoms and the infection will clear on its own, but in some cases, persistent infection can lead to cervical disease. Some types of HPV are high risk because they are linked to the development of some cancers. Nearly all cervical cancers, 99.7%, are caused by an infection from a high-risk HPV. Many types of HPV affect the mouth, throat, and genital areas. They're easy to catch, and you can get HPV from sexual contact. But it is important to know that it is possible to make cervical cancer a rare disease with this vaccination. This article, No Cervical Cancer Cases in HPV Vaccinated Women. Shannon Samecki writes this article, New Treatment Hope for Blood Cancer Patients. A new drug for people with severe forms of blood cancer has been approved for use. Blood cancer is the fifth most common cancer and the third leading cause of cancer-related death in the United Kingdom. Epcoritamab is for patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, known as DLBCL, which has returned or has not responded to other treatments. DLBCL is an aggressive blood cancer and with nearly 5,500 new diagnoses each year. For about 700 of these patients who have had the severest form of the disease, the limited options were based around intravenous drugs. Epcoritamab is a simpler injection which stimulates the body's immune system to attack cancer cells. Jane Thacker from Mansfield in Nottinghamshire was diagnosed with blood cancer in 2006. The 79-year-old said, I found a pea-sized lump across my eyelid. I had no other symptoms, so the doctors weren't worried, but the optician referred me back to the GP and eventually I had the lump surgically removed. The lump revealed I had an aggressive form of cancer in my blood called DLBCL. I wondered if I'd live to see any of my grandchildren. Miss Thacker relapsed 4 times, but said she was now in remission thanks to the new treatment, and it was back to being her energetic self. Professor Fox from the University School of Medicine said, despite recent therapeutic advances, treatment options for this hard-to-treat group of patients has been limited. This can mean many patients do not have suitability effective treatment options, resulting in a poor diagnosis. The decision by the National Institute of Health and Care Excellence will be welcomed by both patients and clinical community as well. Rincey George, policy officer at Charity Blood Cancer UK, welcomed the decision, describing it as a welcome step for many. This article written by Shannon Samecki, New Treatment Hope for Blood Cancer Patients. Stephen Smith writes this article, Divers discover guns and coins in shipwrecks that vanished nearly 2 centuries ago off the coast of Canada. In 1845, the HMS Erebus and the HMS Terror set sail for England on a mission to chart a passage across the top of North America. Led by Captain John Franklin, the voyage ended in tragedy 3 years later when both ships were lost in the frigid waters off Canada's coast. None of the 129 men on board survived. The so-called Franklin expedition marked the worst disaster in the history of the British polar exploration, and that's according to the Royal Museum's Greenwich in London. Nearly two centuries after the ship sank, divers exploring the HMS Erebus wreck have discovered an array of fascinating artifacts, including pistols, coins, and even an intact thermometer. Underwater archaeologists conducted 68 dives over 12 days in September to continue investigating and documenting the wreck of the HMS Erebus, Park, Canada said in a news release. The team excavated a seaman's chest in the forward part of the ship, below deck, where most of the crew lived, finding numerous artifacts including pistols, military items, footwear, medicinal bottles, and coins. In an area believed to be Captain Franklin's pantry, archaeologists found a leather shoe, storage jars, and a sealed medicine bottle. Inside another officer's cabin, researchers discovered items related to navigation, science, and leisure, including a parallel rule, thermometer, leather book cover, and fishing rod with brass reel. The archaeologists also captured thousands of high-resolution photos of HMS Erebus. Parks Canada said the images would be used to produce 3D models to better assess how the site of the wreck, which is in relatively shallow water and vulnerable to storm waves, is changing over time. After exploring the HMS Erebus, the team returned 2 days later to the wreck of the HMS Terror to conduct remote sensing of the ship. This included surveying of the wreck to capture a snapshot of its condition and widening the mapping of vessel access corridor into this mostly uncharted bay. Exactly what doomed the ships, which likely got stuck in ice, remains unknown, and officials have relied thus far on Inuit oral histories to piece together what happened. A total of 39 missions were sent to the Arctic, but it wasn't until 1850s that evidence of what befell the men began to emerge. That exact circumstance of their deaths remains a mystery today. Parks Canada has been working with the Natilik Heritage Society and Inuit Heritage Trust for several years to explore the wrecks. Officials said the artifacts that were recently retrieved would undergo conservation treatment before being displayed at the Natilik Heritage Center in Goya Haven, an Inuit hamlet in Nunavut, above the Arctic Circle. The Franklin Expedition remains one of the most popular mysteries from the 19th century, Canada's Minister of Environment and Climate Change, Stephen Guilbeault, said in a statement. However, thanks to the important work of Parks Canada and Inuit partners, pieces of this mysterious puzzle are being retrieved, allowing us to better understand the fascinating events of this incredible expedition. Stephen Smith wrote, "Divers discover guns and coins in wrecks of ships that vanished nearly two centuries ago off Canada's coast." More discoveries in this particular article. Painting worth more than $54 million rediscovered after almost a century. Portrait of Fräulein Leiser once belonged to a Jewish family in Austria and was last seen in public in 1925. It's fate that it is unclear, but the family of the current owners have had the painting since the 1960s. The Kinsky Auction House estimates the painting's value at more than $54 million. It is called The Rediscovery, a Sensation. A painting of such rarity, artistic significance, and value has not been available on the art market in Central Europe for decades. The Kinsky said in a statement, "The portrait will now be put up for auction on April 24th on behalf of the owners and the legal successors of the Leiser family. This is based on the Washington Principles, an international agreement to return Nazi-looted art to the descendants of the people they were taken from. Before the auction, the painting will be presented at various international locations, including the United Kingdom, Switzerland, Germany, and Hong Kong," the auction house said. The portrait once belonged to the Leiser family, who were wealthy Jewish industrialists in Vienna. Ernst Pleuel, co-managing director of the Kinsky Auction House, said that they had so far found no evidence that the work had been looted or stolen before or during World War II. The painting is described as lost in all catalogues raisonnés, That is a comprehensive list of Klimt's work. In our circles, lost means probably destroyed, probably burnt during the war, but in any case, no longer in existence. It was not to be expected that it would ever reappear. We took an active approach and not only researched the Leeser family as potential restitution claimants, but we also approached potential representatives based on our experience from previous restitution proceedings. Klimt's art has fetched huge sums at auction in the past. His Lady with the Fan piece sold for £85.3 million in June, making it the most valuable work of art ever sold at an auction in Europe. This article, painting worth more than $54 million, rediscovered after almost a century. This is a painting by Austrian artist Gustav Klimt that was believed to be lost for 100 years and was found in Vienna. Taylor Nicoli writes this article. Explorers say they think they found Amelia Earhart's long-lost plane. Groundbreaking aviator Amelia Earhart's tragic and mysterious disappearance while flying over the Pacific Ocean has captivated the world for nearly 87 years, spurring on countless investigations and expeditions for answers on what happened to the beloved pilot. The most recent group to join the search, a team of underwater archaeologists and marine robotics experts with Deep Sea Vision, an ocean exploration company based in Charleston, South Carolina, says it may have found a clue that could bring some closure to the Earhart story. By using sonar imaging, a tool for mapping the ocean floor that uses sound waves to measure the distance from the seabed to the surface, the group has spotted an anomaly in the Pacific Ocean more than 16,000 feet deep underwater. That resembles a small aircraft. The team believes that the anomaly could be the Lockheed 10E Electra, the 10-passenger plane that Earhart was piloting when she went missing while attempting to fly around the world. Deep Sea Vision announced the find through an Instagram post on Saturday, January 27th. Some people call it one of the greatest mysteries of all time. I think it actually is the greatest mystery of all time, said the company's CEO Tony Romeo, a pilot and former U.S. Air Force intelligence officer. We have an opportunity to bring closure to one of the greatest American stories ever. Solving an underwater mystery. The imagery was taken roughly 100 miles away from the Howland Island, Romeo said, the next spot where Amelia Earhart and navigator Fred Noonan were expected to land following their last takeoff from Ley, Papua New Guinea. The pair was declared lost at sea after an extensive 16-day search conducted by the U.S. government. The Deep Sea Vision scanned more than 5,200 square miles of the ocean floor using an advanced autonomous underwater vehicle known as Huygens 6000. It maps the seabed using sonar technology. The company's expedition began in early September 2023 and ended in December. Romeo hopes to return to the site within the year to get further confirmation that the anomaly is a plane, which would most likely involve the use of an ROV, which is a remotely operated vehicle, with a camera that would allow the object to be investigated more closely. The team would also look into the possibility of bringing their find to the surface. While it is possible that this could be a plane and maybe even Amelia's plane, it is too premature to say that definitely. It could also be noise that the sonar data, something geologic, or some other plane, said Andrew Pietruska, an underwater archaeologist at Scripps Institution of Oceanography at the University of California in San Diego. He's the lead archaeologist for the Project Recover, an organization dedicated to finding MIA soldiers and aircrafts from World War II. That being said, if I were searching for Amelia's plane and had this target in that data set, I would want to interrogate it further, Pietruska said. More theories on Earhart's disappearance. A 2017 History Channel documentary proposed a theory that Earhart had Noonan and crashed in the Marshall Islands about 1,000 miles away from the Howland Island, where they were captured and taken to Saipan Island, held hostage, and eventually died. The theory was based off a photo from the U.S. National Archives that featured several blurry figures. Investigators claimed the aviator and her plane were in the image. The International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery, theorized in 2016 that Earhart and Noonan survived a rough landing on the reef in the Pacific Ocean, but died as castaways when their pair could not radio for help. The team claimed that a skeleton of a castaway found on the island in Niku Maroro, Kiribati, in 1940 matched with Earhart's height and ethnic origin, but nothing was substantiated. This article by Taylor Nicoli, explorers say they think they found Amelia Earhart's long-lost plane. Humans can tell by chickens' calls if they are happy or frustrated. Scientists played audio recordings to volunteers, while the majority responding correctly to the birds' emotions. People can tell if chickens are chirpy or frustrated from their calls, according to researchers who believe that listening to the birds could help breeders improve the welfare of their flock. Scientists played audio recordings of hens to nearly 200 volunteers and found that 69% could tell the difference between birds that were happy about an imminent treat and those that were annoyed that no such reward was forthcoming. Jörg Henning, a professor in veterinary epidemiology at the University of Queensland and senior author of the study, said people involved in chicken husbandry can identify the emotional state of the birds they look after, even if they do not have prior experience. The work points to an apparent common ground that many animals share in how they express their feelings. More practically, it paves the way for acoustic monitoring of chicken flocks that use artificial intelligence to gauge the mood in the coop and alerts breeders when their hens aren't content. If such monitoring proves reliable, Henning said, it would provide a convenient and cost-effective way to enhance welfare assessment methods in the commercial chicken production industry. The Victorian naturalist Charles Darwin suspected animals further down the tree of life express their emotions vocally. Writing in The Descent of Man in 1871, he described how the ability might have evolved through successive adaptations in the animal's vocal organs. It raised the prospect that many creatures not only shared a knack for emotion-laden calls, but that they might respond to emotions in other species' calls too. To see if people could identify emotions in chicken calls, Henning and his colleagues played volunteers' audio recordings from hens. The birds had been trained to associate different sounds, such as peeps, rings, and buzzes, with the contents of a bowl hidden behind a swinging door. The surprises ranged from mealworms and normal chicken feed to dust for cleaning their feathers and a rather disappointing empty bowl. When the chickens knew a treat lay behind the door, they produced a barrage of fast clucks or high-pitched staccato clucks, known as food calls, but when there was nothing to get excited about, they responded with whines and long wavering moans known as gackle calls. Each volunteer heard 16 recordings, all of the same length. Half were from chickens that were prepared for a treat, and half from birds that knew no such treat was coming. While 70% of the volunteers recruited from the researchers' professional networks and adverts in online poultry journals could tell the exact excited chickens from the frustrated ones, older people were less accurate, perhaps because they had poor hearing. The work is published in the Royal Society Open Science. The findings build on recent research that suggests humans around the world can interpret emotions in the calls of a vast range of animals, from tree frogs and alligators to ravens and giant pandas. The results have led scientists to suspect that terrestrial vertebrates share an emotional vocal signaling system in line with Darwin's thinking. If the idea survives further investigation, chicken call monitoring could be written into the animal welfare assessments, said Henning, which would be particularly valuable on farms that hold thousands of birds. But small holders could also benefit, he added, from knowing that their perceptions of chicken calls has a good chance of being correct. This article, Humans Can Tell by Chicken Calls If They Are Happy or Frustrated. Scientists played audio recordings to volunteers, with the majority responding correctly to the birds' emotions. 7-year-old Pennsylvania girl surprises 100-year-old best friend on his birthday. Newtown Township in Pennsylvania. A Bucks County, Pennsylvania man celebrated his 100th birthday in style, and it was his 7-year-old best friend who pulled out all the stops to make his day memorable. Layla Luthi Peck pulled up to Joe Gagliardi's house in epic fashion, riding on a Newtown Township fire truck. She arrived as the sirens and horns were blaring for a party like no other. Gagliardi is celebrating a very special milestone birthday. We're both the same age, Joe Gagliardi, given or taking 93 years, of course. How long have you guys been friends, we asked. Since I was a baby, replied Layla. On this centennial birthday celebration, the World War II veteran received a flag flown in his honor over the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. The Newtown Fire and Police Department came out in waves to shake his hand and wish him well. That includes Layla's dad, Sam Peck, a Pendel policeman himself. I grew up two houses down. I always listened to Joe's stories as a veteran, and that encouraged me to join the Army, Peck said. The showstopper? Layla brought 100 handmade cards from her friends at St. Andrew's Catholic Church in Newtown. I thought since he's turning 100, maybe we should make him 100 cards, because he's a good person. We made 100 cards, the whole first grade did, said Layla. Joe is a living example of service and sacrifice, and now Layla is picking that up, too. This article, 7-year-old Pennsylvania girl surprises 100-year-old best friend on his birthday. And the quote of the day, if you can't fly, run. If you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl. But by all means, keep moving. Those are the words of Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr. I hope you enjoyed today's articles. Please join us again next time when we cover interesting stories on Nice News. This has been Joyce Vesper, your volunteer broadcaster for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Stay healthy, everyone. Be well. Be happy. Bye-bye.